Welcome to Relevant Parties by Carhartt Work in Progress. I'm Chelle Ravens, and in this series, I'm going behind the scenes at some of the world's best independent record labels to meet the visionaries and the obsessives who've made musical history. In each episode, we sit down with one of these label founders to find out what makes them tick. We hear the tall tales and big ideas behind some of the most influential records and scenes of the past 30 years, and maybe try to work out just what possessed them to take on one of the most challenging jobs in the music industry. Over the first two series of Relevant Parties, I've had the chance to find out about all kinds of labels, from small-scale vinyl-focused specialists to internationally renowned agenda-setting indies. And along the way, I've noticed a few things about these record label folks and what they have in common. There's definitely a type. They might not all conform to it, but your typical label boss is, for one thing, totally dedicated to their vision, even if that changes from year to year or even month to month. They're stubborn about the art, but pragmatic too. They have to be completely convinced of the quality of what they put out and take it on the chin when not every release sets the world on fire like they think it ought to. The other thing is, they're usually men. And in recent years, it's been extremely heartening to see more women setting up labels, especially in the kind of dance and experimental worlds that I often write about as a journalist. But they are still in the extreme minority. So, for obvious personal reasons, I rather feel like we've saved the best till last with this second series of Relevant Parties. We're about to have an encounter with two women who run one of the best dance labels in one of the best dance cities. It's Mahogany Music. Tracy Washington and Florence Lee have been running Mahogany together for the last decade, while Tracy was brought in way back in the beginning of the century by the label's original founder, Moody Man, also known as Kenny Dixon Jr. Along with Moody Man's own records and the KDJ imprint, Mahogany stands as this kind of living, breathing tribute to the city's endless musical innovation, tapping into vintage Motown, soul and funk, the cosmic slop of Parliament Funkadelic, and the sample sorcery of 90s hip-hop. Tracy and Flo's job is to keep this kind of sprawling artistic vision under some kind of control, working from their respective bases in Detroit and Vienna, Austria. And it was a treat to get them both on a call to explain their unusual roles as the caretakers of this resolutely underground label. We talked about the eccentricity and generosity of Moody Man himself, and about working with phenomenal talents like Amp Fiddler, Andres, and the mighty Norma Jean Bell. And we also talked about the importance of radio, of roller skating, and being part of a music community, as well as their experiences as two black women in an industry that's still dominated by white men. As usual, you can head to the Spotify playlist for a deeper dive into the Mahogany Music catalogue. Don't think there's a single bad record in there, truly. And when I heard how passionate Tracy and Flo still are about all of this music, all these releases, it kind of made the whole listening experience that much richer for me. So I imagine it'll do the same for you. Without further ado then, thank you for listening to the second volume of Relevant Parties. See you on the other side. So what would be a good thing to do is to have you each introduce yourselves and just kind of give your name and what you do so that people can kind of get used to your voice. Perhaps tell me a little bit else about yourself if you like.
My name is Tracy Latrinda Washington. I am from Detroit. I run Mahogany Music and KDJ Records with Florence, my counterpart. And I have been running this label since 2002. I'm currently based in Detroit and looking forward to this conversation.
My name is Florence Lee. I am born and raised and still based in Vienna, Austria. I, as Tracy said, co-run this label or both labels. I've been with the label since 2010. Yeah, I'm also looking forward to this conversation.
So I think we should get some kind of obvious questions out the way first. And what I'd like to know, number one, is how you came to work for Mahogany, both of you. I mean, obviously, Tracy first. Like, what was your route to this job?
My route is knowing Kenny since I was 16 years old through music. I remember, like so many people in Detroit, listening to music in his basement. I wish I had been one who he taught how to DJ, like several other people from the city. But our commonality was always music. Anybody knows me knows that Kenny is my brother. There's no other way to explain. He's just, once he came into my life, he never left. Mm-hmm. And I went away to school in 1991 to Michigan State University. And I would stay in touch with him, bump into him. But I remember calling him one morning, because I knew he traveled a lot and was on European time. I think I called about 5 o'clock in the morning and he asked, do you want to come run my label? He was thinking of starting a label. And I said, yes, without even thinking about it. At the time I was working for the Salvation Army as a homeless housing advocate. And I had been trying to put together different entertainment events on campus. And I would listen to his music just to get me through the monotony of work and being in a town that didn't have a music scene. So when I called him and he asked me, I didn't even think about what it would mean. I just said yes. And that was in like April of 2002. And I think I was living here. Within a week, I moved back to Detroit and started from scratch, learning on the job.
Wow. Why do you think he asked you?
He wanted someone he can trust. He knew that I was recently graduated from school and just wanted to give it a try. I had known him for years. And we, like I said, we always talked about music. I don't know. I can't say why for sure he asked me. I'm just grateful that he did. I'm grateful that he trusted me enough to entrust this new label, Mahogany Music, because KDJ Records was started in 1994 prior to my arrival. So I started Mahogany Music, and our first release on the label was I'm Doing Fine with Amp Fiddler. And I can remember, I can get to this later on, but I can remember my first introduction to so many people on this label. But it's just, my life just totally changed in 2002. And again in 2010 when Flo came along.
Yeah, so Flo, why did you get brought into this family?
So Kenny, I guess, stumbled upon my t-shirt blog that I had on MySpace. This was back in 2007, I believe. At the time, I had heard some of his music. I had heard the name, but I was not familiar really with KDJ Records, him as a person or as a DJ or as an artist. I accepted his friend request, and he basically offered to send me some t-shirts because he liked those t-shirt collages. I was sent some t-shirts in the mail. I got a nice merch care package. And my mom, who's a seamstress, she altered these shirts. And 2 years later, in 2009, was his first gig in Vienna. And I went there wearing the Moody Man shirt, just having a good time with my friends. He spotted me. He was like, oh, wait, come over here. I got to take your picture, because it's not like there were tons of people wearing his shirt in the club, I guess. So
right.
That was the initial face-to-face meeting. And then I think 6 months later, he had a second show in Vienna. And I also went, and that's when we first actually talked. At the time, I was working for the radio. Mm. And so I gave him my card and he gave me a record. We took some more pictures. That was in September of 2009. And in January, I had an email. Tracy, you actually emailed the radio station looking for the girl in the attached photo. That was me. And at the time, this was in 2010. So I was invited to Detroit for Soulscape. And nice. Yeah, very nice.
Why don't you just describe Soulscape to us? Because I think that's definitely part of the broader Mahogany landscape that I'm kind of interested to know about.
Soulscape is like a wild intersection between roller skaters, primarily from the United States, and Moody Man and electronic music fans who converge in one place. And it's this amazing dynamic of people who don't know about electronic music, people who love skating, people who skate from overseas, people who've been to Detroit for the first time. It's really like nothing I had ever experienced. I remember when Kenny wanted to start this party and he said, what do you think about giving a skating party? And he always comes to me and Flo with different ideas. Sometimes we're like, what? But so when we started this Soul Skate in 07, it was a 1-day party and we just did it as a after party to Movement. But a lot of people don't know that Kenny himself is an amazing skater.
Oh, yes.
He's the reason I started skating. And as we began traveling to a lot of parties in America, predominantly Black skate parties, we noticed that most of these parties were an entire weekend, or sometimes there's one in Atlanta, Joy Skate-A-Thon, which is probably the longest running. She's from Detroit as well. It's 5 days long. So there's typically daytime events where skaters gather, network, get to know, you know, they have meet and greets, they have whole hotels rented out for people that drive from all over the country. So we said, why don't we try to do that here? And I think was that 2010 flow, the first full weekend we have, I think wasn't, or 2012.
Yeah, 2000. When I was there for the first time, it was a Sunday night, and that was a one night affair. And it was after midnight till I think 5 a.m. or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Just one night.
They usually go from midnight to 5 a.m. So 2012. So Kenny, it's always evolving. It started one night. Kenny was always, I still don't know if he's played a solo skate yet, y'all. Actually, he's always on the flyer. But we tend to bring in skate DJs. And so for Kenny's fans, they would come and they want to see Kenny play. Well, Kenny is trying to skate, manage the door, giving out free food, or selling, you know, giving shirts to people. Mike Banks is at the door. Here, Carl Craig is at the door, you know. So our party, I swear to you, I don't know. It's difficult to describe what it is because we're so, normally, well, it would have been last year, but because of the pandemic, we got a year off. But Soul Skate is so many things to so many people. For some people, it's an opportunity. I couldn't go to Movement, or maybe I did, but when I come to Soul Skate, I'm standing right next to Amp Fiddler, Dame Funk, Mike Banks, and I'm in line for soul food with Divinity and Minx. And, or, oh, look at this guy. Look at the skate crew going around, spinning in circles, jumping. And, oh, my God, look, it's DJ Quick. So one of the elements that we've added is there's always a surprise artist every time we have our party. And no one knows who that artist is except myself and Kenny until they get on the stage at the rink. So in 2018, we had Ronald Isley as our surprise artist. So far, Florence knows everyone who's been there because she's been there before Isley. Well, who do we have, Florence?
Houdini, Rakim, Quick, DJ Quick,
and DJ Quick.
Louis Vega DJed. Was that, well, that was
Chico
announced,
DeBarge.
Right? That was not a surprise.
That was announced. Duelle,
Kim.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had Kim one Friday night. So, yeah, Soul Skate is something that's is constantly growing and changing. We also try to support some establishments in Detroit, like Burt's. Burt's is one of the longest running jazz clubs in the city of Detroit, and we always have a Saturday daytime picnic there. So people are able to experience our Eastern Market, like our market day here on Saturdays, just to listen to some local music, meet a lot of local people, and they get to, you know, we bring a lot of different cultures together and different, you know, age groups. There's people there with their children. There's 60 and 70 year olds. There's 21 year olds. So it's a pretty dynamic event that's constantly changing. Mm. Please come and be our guest. If ever you're in the city or you intend to come, you let us know and we'll make sure.
Major problem. I cannot skate. I need to practice, clearly. It would be so embarrassing to go all the way to Detroit and put like lace up those skates and then just look like a giraffe, you know? Or just, oh my God. I'm cringing at the thought.
Oh, you will be fine. There's so many first timers that come that can't wait,
really?
You know, to come out. Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? The idea of like that kind of party where you have all the generations. I think that's difficult to do. And it's really like precious when you manage to create an event that you can have like multiple generations at. Tracy, when you were first friends with Kenny as a teenager, I mean, what is it that you think you had in common? Like, what has made this working relationship so successful, do you think?
Well, one of the things is that Kenny is, I would have to say, other than Jesus, the most generous person I know. And I just watch, in addition to music, like I said, there are certain things that me will be somewhere and a song will come on and me, Kenny, and Florence will all, oh my God, that's so-and-so. Florence knows when it was made. Kenny knows where it was made. I know the artist. We really, truly love music and all kinds of music. But Kenny is just working for him. Sometimes I don't understand what he does. Like, a lot of people could not imagine how many surprise, Kenny is known for surprising people.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. I mean, one story I would like to share, and it's a privilege for me to be a part of it. When I'm working with Kenny, I remember once when once after Prince died, shortly after, there's some women in Detroit that are diehard Prince fans. And he said, what do you think about taking them to Paisley Park? And he had instructed me to go online to get VIP tickets for each and every one of them, hotel rooms for each and every one of them. And he told them, I want you to come to Minnesota. I'm playing at the club what's the club, Florence?
First Avenue.
First Avenue. So these four ladies were so excited. Oh, we're going. Kenny's taking us to Minnesota. We're going to play. He's going to play at the club. You know, that's enough. This iconic club where Purple Rain was filmed. They're going to come watch Kenny play. And So the next morning after that, you know, we were at breakfast, everyone's talking. And I said, let's take a ride. Get in the car with these women. I recorded this moment because I wanted proof of people to see their joy. We pull up to, we're in Chanhazen, and we pull up and there is Prince's house. And they just started screaming and crying and, oh my God, Kenny, I cannot. Just to witness their reaction to that someone had done something this nice for them. They never thought they would have been able to go. I don't even know if they knew the event was taking place. And that he, just to be a part of making these four women that happy. But I've seen that expanded from our personal friend group across the globe. Oftentimes me and Florence are out, he's giving things to people, bringing people backstage. He's sent shoes to people's children that, you know, some of his fans, I mean, just the type of stories and things that we know that other people don't know. It's amazing to be a part of and to know that we are trying to make the world a better place, making people happy outside of the dance floor. He's, you know, outside of making good music, he's just a good person. He's always trying to give something to somebody. And that can be so rare in this industry to work with someone whose spirit is still so kind and unchanged.
Yeah, that's interesting because obviously he doesn't really do lots of interviews. And I suppose that could be read as either someone being kind of shy or like protective, or even like a more pointed, like anti-industry or anti-fame kind of thing. Like, is it any of those things, or is there something else going on with his kind of reticence to be like in the spotlight doing interviews?
I don't think he's anti anything. He always feels like there's so many other talented people. Why do they want to talk to me? I think it's more humility than people will accept, but it's not any sort of, no, it's not any anti-industry anything. He's always looking to support other labels and companies and radio programs. And if he can't talk, he'll send them music or send them a package or some shirts or make sure. He's always on me and Florence's head to make sure we're taking care of people. You know, you all deal with it, make sure you're not rude. And so, no, I don't accept that it's any sort of reticence or anti-industry anything.
Okay. Let's break down some of the actual duties then, because obviously you've got two of you running Mahogany, but Tracy, you also run KDJ. Is that kind of how it works? Or is it that you both do everything? Or give me a sense of what your kind of duties are, like what an average like day or week looks like in your virtual office.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I can't even.
There's no average.
I don't even know if I can answer that question.
Like, wow.
A day could I can't even tell you what a day could consist of here, but I would like to say that Florence and I both do everything. We are management control. We are security guards. We are
security
travel
guards.
Agents. Yeah. Oh yes, in the realest sense.
Right. Do we take care of distribution? Every single thing is done in house. Our social media distribution, booking. Right. Management, tour management, taking care of flights.
I see. Okay, so it's more than a label. You're almost like you're also a management, like an agency in a sense as well. You've got lots going on.
That's a brilliant way to put it.
Before we move on to some other artists, actually, this is a really rare opportunity to maybe hear a little bit about Kenny's house, which seems to be somewhat legendary in terms of Detroit buildings. I had heard that it was a purple house, among other things, like a Prince shrine. Is that not true?
I heard that too. I'm not sure if that's the truth. Well, inside the house, which is across the street from Submerge on the East Grand Boulevard, there is a very special room that is not a museum, that houses Kenny's collection. Whole house is not a shrine to Prince. I wouldn't say so.
But is that actually his house, or is it just like somewhere else where he keeps his records? It's his house.
That's the Mahogany Music headquarters, I would say, what you say, Tracy.
Oh, okay.
I agree.
The basement
yes.
has all the records, the merchandise, the office. There's also a studio space in there, but it is not the Prince shrine.
I'm actually in that said house now.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Okay, let's, I'd like to talk about a few of the artists just because, you know, it's the kind of label where artists reappear quite a lot. So obviously there's something to be said for a certain like family or community nature of the label, I think. Would it be right to say that most Mahogany artists are from Detroit?
Yes.
Yes.
And how much is that just happenstance, and how much is that a definite decision to be a Detroit label?
I think it's intentional. I think Mahogany Music is Kenny's attempt at showcasing the talent of Detroit. Mm-hmm. You know, he believes in giving these people that are exceptionally talented, many of them, you know, he's fans of these people, not just, oh, we're both artists, let me put your work out. He enjoys the music that he puts out, he listens to, and he loves. Mm-hmm. So I think it is very intentional on his part that Mahogany Music is showcasing the talent that we have within the city. Mm. And oftentimes giving people an opportunity that other labels may not have found them worthy of. They may not be the right age, or they haven't sold enough. But if he hears something that he likes, he will release it. And he has the ability to do so because it's his label. He's not bound by any corporate chain of command.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about Andres. I was, you know, going through lots of the catalog and thinking about, you know, he might be one of the best producers who's really capable of doing like house and hip hop, and then also kind of erasing that distinction, which I think maybe there are a few Detroit artists specifically who are quite good at. And I also just recently discovered the live version of New For You, which I didn't know existed, which was mind-blowingly good. But what can you tell me about Andres and how he kind of came into the Mahogany family, and what his kind of role is, I guess? What is his character?
I'm going to say as much as I know. Obviously, I wasn't there and I wasn't around when Andres and Kenny met. But as far as I remember, the story goes that Kenny was working at Byrite and Andres was coming to buy records there. I think that's how they initially met. But Andres has a musical background through his father, who is I think Grammy nominated, if not Grammy winning, percussionist.
Oh, wow.
And so Andres also started playing, I think, at the tender age of 3 or 4, Tracy?
I think so. I'm pretty sure it was that age, around that time.
Yeah. So, but then his DJ roots are definitely in hip hop. I guess the house or dance music was added later on.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, I find Andres is one of the most amazing DJs, and he's just able to blend everything together and do it with the technique of a very skilled hip hop DJ. Mm. Like, he would scratch the most
obscure Brazilian songs
or some dub or reggae with Nirvana. Like, you would not see that ever. Like, you wouldn't imagine what he comes up with. And Kenny also always tells me, he goes over to Andre's house and Andre's has like 100 new beats. Okay, here you go. This is some new material. So he could put out, I don't know, 10 albums on Andre's at any given time.
Yeah.
But it's just, he's like constantly making beats or in the studio recording something for someone live or DJing. Like, you can catch him almost at least twice a week, if not more than that, on his own Twitch channel. So he's always also immersed in music.
Is he DJing on Twitch?
Oh, yeah.
All nice. The time. I get notifications at 2 in the morning. Andres started a stream.
And he's well known for his marathon DJ sets as well.
Right.
Like, Andres will not stop. He can go on and on and on. I think I had it on. I'm sure I went to sleep and got back up, but it was like maybe 12 hours or so and he's still on. It's incredible.
Wow. I feel like that's a bit of a theme as well, because does Kenny also like make a huge amount of music that perhaps never comes out?
I don't think as much as Andres. But there is a lot of music that we will probably never hear from Mudira.
Absolutely. Kenny will pull out something, or as I mentioned, I'll show up to the house and something is playing and he'll say, "That old shit." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" "Oh, I made that 10 years ago." I'm like, "What?" So,
How does the kind of quality control work in terms of deciding what to release? Like, do you two have much say in kind of guiding that?
I think it depends. Oftentimes, Kenny will call me and say, here's the next release. And I have no, you know, I'll go through it. Or Florence, I think we both have similar experiences with that. But we do have conversations with him. He'll play something. I know there was a track, I forget what year it came out, Why Do You Feel, that he wasn't going to release. And I begged him to. And thank God he did it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm sure Florence and I both have, there's either a version of a song that we want to come out, or, you know, we're privileged to be able to hear things that other people don't. And like, oh, come on, I hope he puts this out because this is really good.
Yep. Agreed. And also one thing is there's always version 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and probably 16. I Got Work is a good example. I remember exactly where I heard it the first time, and he didn't tell me. He just tested it out in a club in Amsterdam. And I heard his voice, like, is that you? And then it was the tune came in. It's like, I Got Work. Eventually, we shot a video for that in London. And eventually, now you have a different version. And then there's another version, part three.
Oh, wow.
So, but yeah, every Moody Man song you hear, you can be sure there are tons of other versions.
Yeah,
on a hard drive somewhere in the vault. Yeah.
Oftentimes, if you've seen Florence and I on stage with Kenny, you can see our excitement when certain, like, Andres New For You comes on, or Kenny's When I If I Gave You My Love, only for me to listen to the album, and that's not the version that we listen to on stage.
Yeah, so right. Lauren
says it's absolutely accurate. And I'll get upset sometimes because I get this beat in my head and I can't get it out. And I'm like, well, where is this version at?
And you can never hear it again.
Right, never hear it again. That's the beauty, I think, of being able to come and see him play, is because you will hear something that may never be heard again.
Right.
Or that once it's released, the version is totally different. Mm. He oftentimes will test things, you know, while he's playing. So
does he cut dub plates, like acetates, in order to test them in clubs? Or is he playing off like MP3s to do that?
Never. No MP3s.
That seems wrong.
We
that
don't.
That seems wrong.
We do not.
Even as the words came out of my mouth, I was like, what am I saying?
No.
But would it be like he'd cut a dub plate with like just one version or something? It would be like one record has it on it and then that's the only one?
Not that I know. Mm. I don't think so. But a while ago, it would be CDRs, and I convinced him at some point that you can put those on a USB and it's basically the same thing. Just make sure it's a high quality audio file. Don't do the MP3s, please.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean, of course. No, I didn't mean to offend you with talk of
MP3s. No. I just wanted to clarify that.
Something that I think is a real running theme when, you know, hear about Detroit musicians, particularly not only Detroit, but as a kind of lineage and a community, is the fact that there are a lot of people who can really play, like people who play music, play instruments, who are incredible keyboard players or saxophonists or whatever it might be, which I guess over time is something that is perhaps coming away from like house and techno more broadly. But with that in mind, I'd like to talk a little bit about Amp Fiddler, who is obviously an incredible musician, first and foremost, and has amazingly just like surfed through all of these genres over all of the decades and kind of contributed like amazing, like relevant cutting edge things to all of these different genres, I guess. Tell me a bit about what kind of role he plays in the mix. Cause I know that he's obviously, you know, he's playing on records too, right? He's not just in the background.
No, Amp and Kenny have a very close relationship. That relationship was in place before I started working for him in 2002. Mm. He was actually the first artist, the first musician. I remember him saying, his brother named Amp Fiddler will be calling you. And he did. And when I heard his voice and heard him sing, I was just blown away. Mm. And since prior to 2002, they've, I think, contributed to each other's work, listened to each other's work. Kenny will make a track, give it to Amp. Amp will put some vocals on it, or Amp will make a track, give it to Kenny. So they work together quite frequently. They highly respect and love each other. And, you know, Amp is such a fixture for Mahogany Music. He's always willing to contribute. He's always willing to just be there for Kenny and vice versa.
And he kind of provides that kind of physical, historical link to a certain lineage that I think Kenny is part of too, which is that he was like in Parliament Funkadelic for a while. Mm-hmm. And I guess that is some kind of, there's a flavor of that, the, you know, the Cosmic Slop and the George Clinton, which I think is such a feature of what Moody does on records and on albums as well. Mm-hmm. There's, to me, that's like, that lineage seems to like breathe through their work somehow. Maybe that's an outsider thing to say.
I would like to say Am and his brother, Bubs Fiddler, who we lost a few years ago. I'll listen to the songs, and our catalog now has grown, thankfully, to a point where I'll listen to a song and I'll have to, Flo will have to remind me, or I'll have to Google the catalog number, but I'm like, oh, that's Bub, that's Am. And we'll forget, you know, that they've been a part of this many releases on the label. And then there's been other artists that Amp has introduced us to, like Paul Randolph, and, you know, so.
And is there like a live iteration of Kenny's show that includes him?
I don't believe Amp was a part of the last tour, the live tour that Kenny had, but I'm pretty sure it will be in the future. That's something we would love to see, right, Flo?
Absolutely. Yes, I want to see that. We did a few Mahogany Music showcases where Amp was a part of, but he played his own set. And then there's also the combination of Amp, Fiddler, and a drummer from Detroit, aka Andres. So Andres would play congas and bongos to Amp's set and then switch between that and DJing or scratching in between. So yeah, that's another dimension of the live show, but I would definitely love to see. I have not seen the live show when Kenny toured. Was it in 2004, I believe?
2005.
Yeah, I didn't catch that one, but yeah, I would love to see that. I would love to see Kenny perform live, actually. Yeah.
Oh, so there hasn't been one since then?
We did a surprise in Japan 7 years ago.
In 2014.
Yeah. But he performed like three songs or something like that.
Oh, wow.
With who was there?
John Arnold and Jeremy Ellis.
Jeremy Ellis, right.
So someone that I really know almost nothing about, but got heavily into it in the course of doing some research on this, is Norma Jean Bell.
Oh.
Well, okay, that's the kind of response I want to hear. Tell me anything that you possibly can about Norma Jean Bell, of whom I can find almost nothing on the internet, but seems to be a genius.
Norma Jean, first of all, I couldn't believe Kenny actually knew her, because when I talk about music, I grew up in Detroit listening to WJZZ and hearing these names, and it was always Norma Jean Bell and the All-Stars. So she was already a fixture and a talent. Kenny's grandfather, Jimmy D, used to own a jazz club. So Kenny is really entrenched in music and knows so many artists. So that, again, is a relationship that predated my working for the label. But Norma Jean Bell coming over to Kenny's house, or him telling me Norma Jean is going to call you. I'm like, Norma Jean, who? You know, like Norma Jean Bell. And Norma Jean Bell is the reason Roberta Swede was a part of Mahogany Music. So I will always be so grateful to her for that. And to see her pull that sax out. The last time I saw Norma play, I think, was at a birthday party was given for Kenny by Teresa Hill, who's another phenomenal DJ here in Detroit. And Kenny and Norma performed Baddest Bitch, and the crowd went completely crazy. And she played like it was the year she created the song. It was unbelievable. It just floored me every time I see her play.
I mean, that is a record. That
yes,
is a record.
Is.
What else can you tell me about her, though? Because I found out that she was briefly in Frank Zappa's band. Like, what? and then she's just like this incredible house artist, but is also like a sax player and a singer. What else can we know about her?
Well, Forrest played with her recently, I think. And what, 2 or 3 years ago, Flo?
What was that?
Didn't you play with Norma? That was the first time you met her. In person?
The first time I met Norma, I actually have never met her in Detroit, but I met her in the June Club in Paris. Norma performed live in June, and I was fortunate enough to open up for her. That was my first time meeting Norma Jean Bell. But actually, what I also wanted to say about Norma, obviously her classic hit with Kenny is just like, it will never get old. But the first song I heard of Norma's and the first record I bought was Come Into My Room. I heard that on Jazz Peterson Worldwide Show. Later on, discovered that was actually also produced in collaboration by Kenny. So I had heard Moody Man on that Norma Jean Bell record for the very first time.
So they must have been working together like in the 90s even. Would that be right?
Yes, that would be right.
Yeah.
I'm hoping we come across some track that Kenny has with Norma on it that's never been released that can come out. So, and Norma is, you know, she's always looking to perform. She calls, she's, you know, she's ready to be back out on the stage. And I'm so excited for her to have that opportunity when things open back up.
And I mean, I wouldn't ask for her age, but she must be not young, right? Like if she was in Frank Zappa's band at some point, she's got to be like a slightly older lady. So I was kind of wondering if she'd retired or something, but that's great.
Oh, she's not retired. I can tell you that because I was in her studio recently and she has a beautiful home. I mean, Norma is just in so many ways. She's so inspirational in so many ways. She's a very beautiful woman, however old she may be. I have no idea. I'm never going to ask.
No, I absolutely don't need to know.
And I can tell you her talent and wind power hasn't waned at all over the last, I know, at least 20 years since I've been working for Kenny. So I'm looking forward to seeing what she's working on soon.
I mean, I don't know, perhaps this is different when you're in Detroit and kind of plugged into things a bit more, but I just feel as if I didn't know about her and I felt kind of like that seemed weird. I was like, this is someone who is extremely talented and is on a label that is, you know, reasonably well known and stuff. And I just felt there was something like, I feel like she's somehow been sidelined. I don't know. Maybe you don't agree, but to me, I feel like this is someone who doesn't get her dues. What do you think?
I appreciate you respecting her work enough to think that she should be heard from more. And maybe this is something we can arrange with you, Charles, to have her talk to you.
Exactly.
I can't say for sure, but Norma's, even her voice, I think, you know, would just blow you away, her speaking voice. Yes. So.
Oh, wow. Even her speaking voice. I mean... One can never really be sure, like how these things even like translate internationally or anything. But it just seemed to me that I was just like, this is someone who should just be, because someone like Andres is I think pretty famous in the UK, right? Like it's someone I've known about Andres for years, and they're both like incredible musicians and who have had this like career in house music but are also musicians. I don't know. It just seemed to me that I thought, this woman needs to be more famous. So,
and I think too, there are so many people who are producers, musicians, and DJs, but the DJing is what takes them across the water, not necessarily them playing the live instruments.
Yeah.
So if Norma were to come, she would have to be featured with someone to play a song or two, because we don't need to see Norma DJ, but will people be open? I'm sure they would, to seeing Norma pull out her saxophone and blow while Kenny is playing or while Amp is playing or, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
But then that just gets to some slightly more prosaic problems about how to, you know, bring music to other countries. Like taking a live band on tour is extremely complex and expensive.
Absolutely.
Basically, right? Like,
yep.
Yes.
We're going to get back onto some of those sorts of topics in a sec. But there's one other album that I just wanted to mention that's one that I really like, that I feel maybe sticks out a little bit as a bit different on the Mahogany roster, which is the Urban Tribe album that came out in 2010. And Urban Tribe obviously are, you know, historically also a 90s act. They'd released on so-called IDM labels like Reflex and on Moax. And I guess it's fair to say that it, you know, it's a spikier kind of sound, a more like techno sound than perhaps Mahogany's known for. Can you tell me anything about how that release came into your hands?
I think a lot of this comes from, well, give my opinion, the existing relationships Kenny has had with DJ Stingray, with Carl Craig, and oftentimes these guys, it's always their intention to get together to make something musically, you know, musically, and they got this idea together or have been working on things and decided to release it. One thing Kenny can tell you, you won't, even when he's DJing, you're not always going to get that four on the floor house music. We could release a jazz album on Mahogany Music. So while we are primarily an electronic music label, that encompasses not just house music.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it's other people that will say Kenny is house. Well, Kenny can give you some blues and some funk too. So.
Yep.
I feel like it's a project that, you know, this dear to Kenny's heart. He I want to divert a bit to when you talked about what is it that we do for the label. It's relationship building. Florence and I have people, there are people that I've worked with in Europe and the UK and Scotland whose faces I hadn't seen. Some people, I think I've seen everyone now, but when you think about just building these relationships for years with people, whether it's in the studio, on the email, a distributor, a record store owner, I think that's also present in the music, and it's also how some releases come about. So
Florence, do you want to come in or?
That particular album is, like Tracy said, DJ Stingray, Sherrod Ingram, Carr Craig, Chemetrics is on some tracks, and Anthony Shakir, Shake, exactly, and Kenny. It's a collaboration between those artists, and there's probably some urban trap material that from those sessions that we also haven't heard.
Mm.
In terms of musical styles, like Tracy also said, nothing surprises me. I could see anything happen on Mahogany Music in the future. And also KDJ Records, like Kenny would also do more techno tracks and then come back and break it all the way down to some lovely soulful sounds.
Yeah, because I was thinking, oh, this is, you know, kind of different. And it's like this whole other strand of Detroit. And it's this, you know, more like machines and robots. And it reminds me of like, yeah, Underground Resistance and this kind of strand. But then also, I mean, again, everything I know about Detroit is secondhand wisdom, you know, but I've also heard that in Detroit, there is this like a kind of radio culture and a musical culture that is really eclectic. Is that right? Like the idea that, you know, historically someone like Electrifying Mojo could play anything, or like The Wizard would play anything on the radio, and that people are kind of open-minded. Is that kind of, is that something that you think is true of like a Detroit listener?
I absolutely think it's true. You can look like, you can see someone in Detroit who looks like the most hardened criminal out there, who's listening to Michael Franks, listening to Prince, listening to the Grateful Dead. And you would never, you know, you would never look at this person and think. So I've heard people like Jean Luponty from France, who's a jazz violinist, say that their biggest fan base is in Detroit and has been for 20 years. And I remember when I was younger, where Mojo, when you would be in your car, people will be flickering their lights in the car and the porch, the lights on their porch, because Mojo told them that's how we could identify who was listening to the radio. And even, you know, Prince has this iconic interview with Mojo. So Detroit will astound you with the musical taste that people have. Mm. Even within groups, like you can have people that are friends like Mike Banks, Kenny, DJ Stingray, and Carl, and you listen to them talk about music, you'd be amazed at what they, where they diverge and where they come together, and what, you know, the tastes are just so varied, so varied here.
I'd love it if both of you could maybe pick like a kind of all-time favorite record on the label. Well, here are the kind of options. I'd love to know an all-time favorite record, but I know that you'll say I couldn't pick a favorite, so okay, fine. But I'm kind of interested in maybe like the one that you've played most, the one that you feel like you've come back to the most, and then maybe if there's one that just means most to you in terms of the kind of story behind getting it out.
Hmm. You know how tough that is. Well, I mentioned earlier how I used to listen to, I know I used to listen to Your Sweet Lovin' when I was up in Lansing and I felt so stuck.
Mm.
There's several songs. Let me just pull. I hate to have to pull out my phone and look at my most recent. My
That's
most
what I'm
played.
Doing right now.
I'm so embarrassed. I will say this: there is a hidden track on Black Mahogany, and this actually came out on Peace Frog. So maybe you shouldn't record this part. I love Peace Frog, by the way, but it's a hidden track. You know which one I'm talking about, Florence.
I believe I do.
I don't even know if it has a name, but the woman is saying Sunshine, but Kenny has a song called Sunshine, and that's not it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have this vinyl, you won't know what I'm talking about. And I have searched. It's not on YouTube either. So if you don't have the record, oh God, I have to send it to you. You would love it. That song just resonates with me on such a visceral level. Because some of this was made before I was working for Kenny, and I oftentimes will listen to his music and like, what, like anybody else that likes music, what was he thinking about when he made this? You know, like, why does this song sound like this?
Yeah.
But I'm going to find something more concrete.
Florence, do you have one that you had thought of in the meantime?
Definitely not one. This is I've avoided this question, but ask me for my favorite, even ask me for my top 10. Those could change from day to day, from week to week. And I mean, my first introduction to the label was the first 12-inch Mahogany Music One, which was I'm Doing Fine with Ann Fittler. That was just such a, that's just such a classic. And recently I've been listening to a lot of the Celebrity Barbecue Sauce album. I love Formula for Passion. I love also that there are different styles on the album, but I couldn't give you, like, I don't even want this part to be in there. Like, it's like, I can't. Like, Andres alone, you know.
Andres, 2003, that first one, I used to listen to it so much. It's just that people. That album blew me away. Yeah, I love that. Is one of my absolute favorite Mahogany releases. And recently with Kenny,
it's You're Still the One.
Oh my god, yeah, that song Reality. Gives me chills. Oh, Reality, now that, oh god, Chell, have you heard Reality? Have you heard, you have to sit and listen to every single song. It's just,
which record is it from?
Andres's first release, the first label album.
Oh, okay. Andres, yeah,
2003. And most, and lately I've been listening to, sometimes when I, what is it? There's a skit Kenny has, it's called I'm Already High. It's like a conversation he's having with himself. It is absolutely brilliant. It's like a minute and a half with this Brazilian beat behind it. It's just classic Kenny. He's so funny. Sometimes people, you know, some of the most fun that we have is on the road, on flights and cars on our way to the venue, just being in each other's presence. And Florence, people get us confused everywhere we go. And sometimes when I listen to some of these songs, it brings that, it, you know, I conjure these memories. So that's one of the things I love most about what I do is that Florence is from a whole nother complete continent and people all over the world. Kenny never wants to accept this, that we look alike. People confuse us all the time. They'll come up to her and say, I just saw you. Or they'll see me and ask, don't you remember when I was, when, you know, when I saw you in France? And I'm like, that's not me. That's Flo. It is. I love that. Like, she is my wonder twin. Like, she's so everything I'm weak in. She's got so many superpowers. I can't even tell you how she keeps me together. Like, her mind is just brilliant. And the fact that we look so much alike. I just love that.
I miss you too, Tracy.
I miss you too.
Oh, guys.
And this is the thing. We
it's
appreciate
been a minute.
Yeah.
Like, women, it's not enough of us, like, in the industry. I know that was one of the things you had initially asked about. Like, in Detroit, I've had the pleasure of being around women like Bridget Banks. In our house music industry, techno, electronic music, I know that there was Kelly Han had a record label, Acacia Records still does. There's Women on Wax with DJ Minx in Detroit. But for some of the larger, more well-known labels, there's not a lot of women that have opportunities like Florence and myself and the opportunity to build these relationships internationally. And I would like to see more of it. I would like to see women that aren't involved with the label because of who they're dating or you're backstage because you know the DJ, but the opportunity to learn and grow and be a part of this scene, because I think it's so important. And we've had good experiences. Like, people, I think people respect our work, our longevity. There are some people that question this label with the amount of records we press, but we take our work very seriously. We take Kenny and we take each other. We take our entire community very seriously. And we hope that people do respect that about us. We may not, you know, be degreed in business and marketing, but to know when we step out onto a stage that there are anywhere from 100 to 1,000 people there because of the work that we've done, or someone can hold a record and say, this means so much to me, to have had anything to do with it is something, it's a source of pride for both of us.
Could you elaborate on, you referred then to the number of records?
Oh no.
You started it. You started it.
This is a label that are not known for pressing lots of copies of records.
That's right.
And why is that?
Because what Kenny says goes.
Would you prefer to print more records?
There are times that I would, but I'm not an artist who's had to deal with records being sent back and not being afraid that it's not going to happen again if someone changes their mind. I think there's a lot of misconceptions as to why we only press so many of our records, but I don't even know if this is something I want to get into on.
But what's the, like, what do you have, like, a set number that you would press for per, like, per issue kind of thing?
Depends on the release, I would say, but even the most recent release on KDJ Records, I think this was the most that's ever been pressed, and it was a triple pack, and it was still not enough. So,
what, taken away?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes, I thought about that the other day, and I was like, maybe I'd like to buy that. And I had a look on Discogs, and it's very expensive. And I kind of wondered that about that, right? Because like, when you don't press very many copies of something that is then popular, there are people out there who are like taking massive cuts off of your hard work. That seems annoying.
Well, what is a lot of records for an independent label? But I don't know, Tracy, do we want to get into this?
I don't know that I want to get into it, but right. Yeah, but enough, from what we've been told by record presses, like no one is pressing this much. So It is absolutely, what is not true is that we are trying to start bidding wars on certain websites. That is not the case at all.
Right.
I think, again, knowing Kenny, it's not my label. This is his record label. If he tells me we're only pressing 100 records, and 100 records it is. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I suppose, I mean, probably in terms of what's considered like an average number these days. Yeah, obviously people are pressing far fewer records than they used to. But maybe we should just take a moment just to talk about Taken Away, which... Like, it's a really silly thing to say, oh, my favorite record on the label is the last one that you put out. But oh my God, that album, like, oh, it just like keeps revealing itself to me in like new ways every time I listen to it. I'm just not surprised that there is the demand for it that there is. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the kind of record that once you hear it, you want it on vinyl. Like, It's hard to explain. You just need it like as an object in your house.
I agree. And it was actually... It was a historic one in the sense that it only came out in digital format last year.
There was a demand
for vinyl, obviously, immediately. And we also had plans on releasing it sooner. It was even more of a relief to finally have it in my hand as well.
Yeah. I love the cover art, too. Where does that come from?
That's Richard Wilson from London.
And it's taken from a photo that I took right here in this building of Kenny. And then we handed it off to Richard to paint. So
I think that's partly why. It's because I felt like I needed that image large in my house. You know, it's just such a beautiful image. Like,
it really is a beautiful image.
Yeah,
it is. Yes.
And I think just as a record, like it's so... It just condenses so many of the things that Kenny's so good at. And like, it takes you on this like kind of epic, like... history. It's so personal. It just does so many things for me. But though, let me flip that question around and ask you a different question, which is there a record that was very difficult to bring to life? What's like the hardest record that you've ever had to birth? Because I get the impression that some of them probably take quite a long time from start to finish.
There is a release we're working on now that's taken far too long that I don't want to mention. And I'm frankly, you know, things happen. It will come out, and we are working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Andres, and then Taken Away, I think there was such a demand for it. But in terms, again, going back to the number that were pressed, you never really know. You can say, we've had situations before. I will just say that people requested an amount of records and then they wanted to send them back. So it's easy for people to say, well, you should press 20,000. And if 10,000 gets sent back, then what? We like to think that people will love every release that we put out, but we don't take for granted. We are not arrogant enough to assume that everything we put out, everyone is just going to love it. None of us feel that way.
Kind of on the same note of like challenges and the industry. I mean, you mentioned perhaps some of the good aspects of being a woman in the industry and how that may have kind of benefited you in some ways. But have you felt that your careers have been kind of limited or in some way different because you're women? Like, do you feel like you have to engage with the industry in a different way or...
Well, I don't know how it is to be a man, so I can't tell you.
I can honestly say that I'm grateful. I have the support of Kenny first and Florence, and I don't find myself in situations where I think would have necessarily been easier if I were a man, honestly. Now, I know that I'm honest enough to know there are things that I could do better. I think everyone can do better with something, but I pride myself on being a woman and how I speak to people. I value everyone I work with. Even when we're at venues, I value the security person, the person picking up the bottles, you know, the driver who picks me up, who makes sure that I get there safely. And I don't know, being a woman, I think that we celebrate these people. We don't disregard folks, you know, by virtue of me coming from Detroit, being Black, being a woman, whatever it is. But I've never been blatantly disrespected. I've never had any issues. I don't have a Me Too story. Florence and myself conduct business accordingly. You know, I don't know. I would like to see more women in the industry, but yep. Do those women want to be? I know that I'm in this industry because of Mr. Dixon. I didn't put myself here. And I know that there are plenty mm-hmm. of other producers who feel like maybe I'm not qualified because I'm not Detroit. I'm from Detroit. I'm not from New York, or I'm from Europe. I feel like in Europe, women have a lot more opportunity than I see in the United States. Do you feel that way, Florence? I see a lot of women that are manager. Well, I think I do see women that are at least serve as some sort of management for some artists.
Yeah. I think a lot of that is changing, but we're definitely in a very privileged position, both Tracy and myself.
And I mean, in Florence, I don't mean to cut us off, but like the relationship that we have with Carhartt is because of Florence. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not because of Kenny primarily. It's Florence made that possible. She makes so many things possible. And, you know, Kenny always tells us, and I don't think he would have to, but how you treat people is important. People remember how you make mm-hmm. them feel. And we're not doing it because we're being told. It is a massive privilege, even to be the fact that you took the time on, you wanted to talk to Florence and I, because I must tell you, we both had serious misgivings, like, oh, I don't know. You know, we're not used to it for one thing.
Sure.
But we are very grateful for that you found us worthy of the opportunity to hear our story. You know,
that's it though, isn't it? It's important to, you know, your story is maybe a little bit unusual. And yeah, there really aren't that many women involved in running labels. Like, it's really mm-hmm. important to speak to you and for you to be able to say something about your experience, I think.
And Kenny will insist, talk to Flo, talk to Tracy. Sometimes mm-hmm. people try to circumvent us, text him, or they don't like a response we've given. Well, I talked to your girl, but she said, no, talk to Tracy, talk to Flo. So it's he makes it possible. And I think other people could do the same thing, but it's obvious Florence and I have a completely above board relationships with Kenny. We're all like family. It's not, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And when you come from a true place of love and respect, anything is possible. If people are given the opportunity, my degree is in family community service in the College of Human Ecology from Michigan State. It has nothing to do with music business, but I learned because I was given the opportunity to, and I took it seriously. And I'm still learning. There are certain platforms. Now my daughter is involved with helping us. She actually built the Moody Man website, and her and Florence are constantly concocting some new protocol to improve something. And I'm fascinated by their minds, you know.
That's great. Your daughter built the website.
Yes, she did.
That's
the,
amazing.
The record that you see spinning, she took every photo on there, and he gave her the opportunity to do that, you know?
Amazing. See, but again, that's another job that, you know, stereotypically, you wouldn't expect a woman to have coded the website. So that's right. Cool. I mean, it's funny you say, like, in Europe, the opportunities may be different. I definitely see a lot of women in management and in, like, PR, but actually running a label, still not many, but there have been a lot more recently. And mm-hmm. I mean, the same with DJing. It was like, mm-hmm. even like 7 or 8 years ago, there were really not many women DJs around. And now, I mean, the whole thing has completely changed as far as I can see. Like the mood in the club is different even. There's just more women everywhere. It's good.
Yeah. We're just grateful Mahogany didn't need Me Too to give women a chance. So.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. You've been doing this job for quite a long time, and in that time the industry itself has changed a lot. The way that people listen to music has changed a lot. You know, a massive shift towards digital, and also into the hands of like Apple and Spotify instead of all the different kind of record labels, and lots of things have changed essentially. What could you tell me about like the kind of changes that you've seen since doing this job? Like, how do you think running an independent record label has changed over the last, I guess, what year did you say you started? It was
2002 for myself.
So nearly 20 years. Yeah. What do you think are the biggest changes in terms of running an independent record label?
I know one thing that Florence changed for me was I started record labels when you physically sent out white labels in the mail. And then one day Florence sends me a link and says, here you go. Here's a SoundCloud link. So to see how so many things are being digitized, and now that things have changed with the pandemic, I often wonder with Twitch, how it will impact touring. I know a lot of people are very anxious to get back, but I wonder if people will now look at performing. It's not something that we've done any streaming concerts, but I know that a lot of DJs have pivoted towards Twitch and the pay-per-view thing. So I don't know if that's something that the industry will now have to contend with that. And that's not necessarily the label side, but because we don't, our label is different. People often will, you know, we've read that we need to do things differently. We're behind the times, we're too underground. So because it's truly 100% independent, I must say, I'm not so concerned. I think now one of the things that we could do, honestly, we're better able to gauge because of technology, real interest. Like people don't necessarily have to guess because distributors can go to record stores. They can place it in a, you know, an order based on, you know, your people are able to instantly prepay for things now. So I know one of the things that, well, taken away, we actually sold, this was the first release that we sold through our website first, and that did pretty well. So it's comforting to know that we are enabled because of technology to truly be, if we wanted to be independent, but we respect the ecology of dance music and the distributors. And we've had a lot of people contacting Florence and myself requesting to be sold records to directly, but we have to keep the distributors in business as well. There is a protocol to things. And I think that I'm a dinosaur, but I don't want to sidestep and say, let's wipe out the distributors and we just sell it all ourselves. We all need each other. I think if it's anything the pandemic has taught us, technology aside, is we need to be concerned about how what we do impacts others. And I think I like being able to make sure that other people have jobs and that they're relevant in this industry. Not that, okay, now I have a website, I don't need a distributor anymore. No. I recognize the ease that they provide for us. And for someone who lives in a remote village in Croatia or a tiny town in Austria, you know, if they want to get their hands on a record, the distributor may have a greater capability to reach them than we do.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. I was tapping away on Twitter about a point like this recently, which is someone was like making the case for, you know, how technology gives independent artists the power now to like go sell direct to fan, you know, and that this is like how things should be and you can cut out all the middlemen. And I'm like, middlemen are kind of what the whole scene, the whole community is, you know. It's like, it's the distributors, it's the people who run record shops, it's the people who are running the door and like taking jackets and running the bar and all of these people who apparently are like getting in the way of your kind of experience, you know, direct experience fan to musician. But it's all of those interactions that kind of make it interesting, right? Like, I'm sure that, like you say, it's like your job is about relationship building. You know the names of the people who are doing all these different jobs. It's like, yeah, I think, I just think it's kind of wrongheaded to try to streamline that stuff in some ways. So no, it doesn't make you a dinosaur.
Okay. And it still gives us an opportunity. Oftentimes, Kenny and Florence, if I'm not around, will pop up at a particular record store with some copies. Mm-hmm. Like, one thing I can tell you about Mahogany Music and KDJ Records, you never know what could happen. The record is sold out and one will show up in your mailbox. You know, there's so many reasons for why we do things the way that we do. And it's not for everybody. Sometimes people don't understand it, but you can, you know, we just really want to be a part. We are grateful to be a part of this industry, and to just, more than that, in service to humanity, to be able to talk about music, watch music, dance to music, create music, sell music. We all have a role to play. Carhartt and the support, the amazing support that they give to independent record labels, they've made a lot possible for us, even spreading, you know, introducing Kenny's music to much younger audiences. So we all have a role to play. And I just, the opportunity to even engage, I never thought that I would be being interviewed by a woman in the UK, not me, you know, whoever thought that would happen, or that I would be partnering with someone in Vienna, my, you know, come on.
Yeah. I mean, that I was going to ask about that. Like, that seems complicated, that you're just constantly on two continents. How do you even make that work? Or do you have to, Florence, do you like start work late, or like what's the kind of protocol?
Usually I start work late. Yes, there's a time difference with 6 hours. I'm 6 hours ahead.
Yeah.
But like we said earlier, there's no typical day.
No typical
It will
day.
Change from day to day and week to week. So my office is where my laptop is and where I have Wi-Fi. It doesn't really matter where I'm in the world. And obviously the travel part of our job is not happening right now, or will hopefully happen at some point again. But yeah, other than that, I need a stable internet connection.
We've been futuristic for a while, Shal, because this is how Florence and I have been working. Like there are times I would be so alone because all my friends would be at work and I'm at home or in the office on my computer. Mm. And this is how it's been. Like, I am such an early bird. It's great to know I can call. If I wake up at 4 o'clock, it's not too early to call Florence or to call the UK.
Right.
Even when I called Kenny that fateful morning and he offered me this job, it was 5 a.m. and nobody else would have been up, but I knew he was on you guys' time, so he was up. So it works out for us. And Kenny is a damn artist, so he'll call Florence at some crazy time. It'll, I guess, 8 o'clock in the morning her time. It all works. It's not hard for us at all.
It is not.
It really is not. For me, my life is patterned around you guys, the UK, especially. Mm-hmm. We have always had such a strong audience. Like, nobody knows music in this world like people from the UK. You know, the Northern Soul folks and all the way, you know, down to London. It fascinates me. So it's an honor for me. I like to get up with the birds in the UK, you know, and the Parisians and the Austrians and the Germans. So
okay, I have one last one. And I guess this is a kind of optimistic one. So now that we are finally possibly maneuvering out of the pandemic at whatever speed, I don't know, are you still in some kind of lockdown in Detroit?
Things have opened up. Kenny is actually playing tomorrow night here in Detroit.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
So in Detroit, the messaging in Michigan now is if you're vaccinated, you don't need to wear your mask outside, but it's warm and people are more likely to take them off. So yeah, things are pretty much open. I think school children don't have to go back into the fall. Clubs and restaurants are reopened. So I think we're pretty much open because I think our vaccination rate is just at 50% or something like that.
Nice. What about in Austria then?
Yeah, the lockdown is over. Uh-huh. I went to the gym for the first time today. So restaurants are open. There's a curfew at 10.
Okay.
Children are back in school. But yeah, slowly but surely we get.
All right. So the question is, now that we are definitely on the cusp of getting to go back out there, describe for me what your kind of ideal first party back would be like. And I would like to know something that you would like to see change, something different from before this kind of colossal shutdown.
I love to be back at a music festival and on a boat party in Croatia.
Ooh, nice. I have been on a boat party in Croatia and there is something quite special about that.
The Argonauti in particular. And I say that because when I'm in Croatia, well, some of the festivals there aren't so massive. It's a nice crowd. It's manageable. It almost feels like a family gathering. But
who would be playing on the boat though?
Oh no, Flo would be playing. First of all,
that's a good answer.
Thank you. I had the honor of playing on the Argonauti once, and that was amazing. My ideal lineup, I would say, would always be 3 chairs. I want to experience that one more time. I don't need nothing else. I'd probably be back in Detroit at Burt's or what's the music gallery, one of Theo's parties. Dark, phones in pockets or in the locker somewhere. I would love to see people just dance with each other instead of staring and recording the DJ.
Yes, that's a good suggestion. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't enjoy being recorded or stared at when I'm DJing. I would love to see that I make you dance. I would love to see less phones in the air and more interaction of the crowd.
So Tracy's coming to Europe to see Florence, and Florence is going to Detroit to see 3 chairs. You might have to do some scheduling to make sure that works out.
Oh, yes.
And also, I have to say, Southport Weekender, I could do a cartwheel through the wall right now waiting for that to come back around in 2022.
Yes.
I've only had the opportunity to go once, and that was life-changing for me. I mean, I've never experienced anything like that before.
Wow. I've never been. What's the vibe? God.
The vibe is all these music-loving people literally under one roof with multiple venues within that roof. I can remember me and Florence, I think both in tears, watching Chaka Khan with maybe hundreds, if not a thousand other people at Southport Week, at some tiny village in the UK. I mean, I love the English countryside anyway, but it's so far out. This music industry, our music in particular, fascinates me because I don't think this can be said of any other genres, not hip hop, not R&B, not classical jazz, maybe some of the jazz festivals, but to go to some of the most remote locations in the world and people from all over the world are communing together over some shared love of a song or an artist and a DJ, not even a live music artist, but someone playing all types of music. It's just, this is one reason I love music festivals so much.
I've just Googled it quickly and it looks like it is on next year. So see you in a year. Florence, Tracy, thank you so, so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Relevant Parties from Carhartt Work in Progress. If you want to dive into more music from the labels in this series, check out the Relevant Parties playlist on Spotify. You can find the link in the show notes. And remember, you can subscribe to Relevant Parties so that you never miss an episode. It's available wherever good podcasts are found. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and a comment on Apple Podcasts. We'd really love to know what you think. So thanks for listening, and join me next time for more stories behind the world's best record labels.